Today, it's close to the edge. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to the latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Today, I'm joined again by Harry Dent. Hi, Harry.
Hi, Martin. Good to be back.
Yeah, thanks for coming and spending a bit of time with me today. And we were just discussing, you know, we are close now to the precipice, aren't we?
Yeah, you know, I mean, and we have the big, crazy election in the U.S. coming up literally in a matter of weeks. And I think that could be a really critical turning point. But, you know, I mean, everybody knows I've been warning about this bubble. You've been warning about it, particularly in real estate. I've been warning it's a bubble in everything, even gold, you know, in real estate and stocks in every country and you know, merging and developed and stuff. This is on a 90-year cycle, and I can't stress that enough, that I had all the way back in my early studies of the markets and coming out in college and coming out in business school and stuff, I saw this chart of the stock market since stock exchanges started in the late 1700s and the Industrial Revolution, which is emerging, and free market capitalism and Adam Smith for the first time, and democracy. And I can pin all three of those origins to 1 year, 1776, right about 500 years from now. A 250-year revolutionary cycle. The steam engine was finally patented and perfected. Adam Smith, breakthrough and still the best book in economics in history, The Wealth of Nations, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence and the Founding Fathers and all. I mean, this is the type of period we're in. But since stock markets really became a real thing and not just a few government-owned, you know, South Seas and stuff like that, Mississippi land bubble and stuff. Those were very rare and joint ventures, the beginning of the stock. But the real stock market started then. If you look at stocks since then, and we've got them from British times all the way connected to U.S. today, there's one cycle that stands out like a sore thumb, a 90-year bubble and great reset cycle, I call it. 1837, the panic of 1837, into the depression bottom in stocks of 1842 and the bottom in the economy, 1843. And that was the biggest real estate bubble ever in the United States. That was the first one. And then you have 29 crash into 32. Note the bottoms, late 1842 and late 1932, exactly 90 years apart. And now we're hitting this one in 2020, and I've been saying, Martin, since I came out with my demographic indicators and longer-term cycles in the mid to late 80s, all the way back then, I said, the lowest point in the stock market in our lifetimes will probably come in late 2022. That is still my target. We just saw a peak in February that around the world is still the peak of almost every stock market around the world. None of them have topped that peak yet, even with this massive money printing around the world and government stimulus and giving free money to business and consumers to replace the COVID crisis. And now I see, I just put out in my newsletter, just I think it was last Tuesday, what I call the perfect chart. It look at the S&P 500 all the way back to the late 70s. And it shows the bottom, you know, in 82, shows us coming, it shows, goes through all the tops in the entire bubble boom. And this whole boom has been a bubble. 87 was the first bubble. Oh, it was a little baby bubble, but it was a bubble and it crashed 40% in 2 weeks, in 2 months, most of it in 2 weeks, but in 40% in 2 months. We never saw that in the entire 1942 to 68 long-term bull market. It wasn't a bubble boom. And corrections were no more than 20%, you know? And then when it finally crashed with the generation spending cycle down for 14 years, it only went down 50% over 14 years. This is not that. So we go through all the tops, and then we have another top trend since QE in 2009, when they really ignited this final bubble, and in a time of weak demographic growth and very high debt, they pumped so much money that we had the biggest bubble ever, totally artificial. I go through those tops, and these two intersect right now. September 2nd high, and I think, you know, I've been saying in my newsletter in recent weeks, markets have held up well enough with Trump doing everything stupid possible. I mean, he has gone all out, doubling down on stupid. He gets the virus. It's a blessing of God. It revealed to him the truth of how this thing, and people need not fear because he arose from the dead. You know, this is just crazy stuff, okay? He's done everything you can do wrong, and he still might get reelected because of the Electoral College. He'll never win the popular vote. And the I've been saying the markets look like they want to make one more new high right in the election. But these lines intersect right into this time frame, September, October. So I think this is the end of the bubble, very, very likely. And people got to understand, you cannot. I'm telling you, I like financial advisors. I've spoken to financial advisors ever since I developed these tools in the 80s. They love the long-term bull market. They don't like my forecast now because I'm saying every boom ends and bubbles are even worse. You cannot listen to your financial advisor. They will tell you this. They will tell you, hey, don't worry about it. The markets always go higher. I have you diversified. I'll limit your losses. Don't get out of the markets. And they're going to be 100% wrong. I'll tell you why. And you already saw it in the GFC. What happened in the GFC? What type of diversification did you get? Real estate crash. Everywhere except for Australia, okay? But around the, you know, real estate crash. Stocks went down. Gold went down before it was over. And silver, 70%. Gold is down 33%. So everything went down. There was no diversification, which there normally is, you know. So your stockbroker is going to say, oh, and by the way, on this 90-year cycle, the last time we had a bubble of this magnitude, and this is larger, stocks went down not 50 or 30 or 20 or even 70%, 89% in the U.S., the leading bubble burst. Blue chip stocks, not small caps. And those stocks did not get back to those levels for 24 years, 1929 to 1953. If you had retired, let's say like now, in 2020, you were retiring in 1929, stocks would have crashed that you hold in your retirement 89% and not gotten back to those levels until you were long dead. Okay? That's the risk you face here. Your financial advisor does not see that risk as possible, does not think governments will let it happen. Look, I say governments blew the bubble up this high. They're the ones guaranteeing this is going to happen because they're not dealing with the bubble. They're not dealing with the debt that keeps mounting up and real estate bubbles that are going to be in the point. I'd say if the Australia bubble did go up at the same rates in the last decade for the next decade, then somebody with a $50,000 income would be buying a $2 million glorified trailer. You get me? I'm not lying. This is exactly what's happening. This is not sustainable. This is the riskiest time in your life, and everybody's telling you the government won't let it happen. Yeah. You know what they told me in Dubai when I was lecturing in 2007, just before their real estate bubble took a 50% blow in 1 year? I said, you got a bubble, it's going to burst. You're the biggest bubble in the world right now. They said, Harry, you don't understand our real estate. The government supports it. The government won't let it go. They'll buy when commercial and consumers don't. I'm like, oh, now you're really in trouble. That's Australia. You know what Australia, second, you can't listen to your real estate agent or mortgage broker. They sell real estate. They're cheerleaders for the bubble. They don't have a clue. You know what they say about me? Harry doesn't understand. They say the same thing I know about you. Oh, they don't understand Australia real estate. They're looking at other markets. We're unique. Baloney. You're the second biggest bubble in the world, second only to China, that is so far off the charts that it's for a rich person 40 times income to buy a tiny condo in Hong Kong, and for everyday people, it's 20 times. The greatest bubble. You're number two to that. And right behind you is Vancouver and Toronto in Canada. because they, like you, didn't have a bubble burst last time like the U.S. and many countries. So you're more overvalued. And so they don't understand the markets. I tell people, I do understand that real estate is different in different parts of the world because of supply and demand and demographics and migration. That's what I study, for crying out loud, demographics and migration. I'll tell you the two most similar markets to me, California and Australia. Not California and New York, not California and Florida, not California and London, not Australia and London, California and Australia. Both areas, very attractive, high migration, people want to live there, limited supply because they're basically desert. California outside of the coast is a desert, okay? And Australia outside of the coast is a big desert. So limited supply, attractive place, you're going to bubble the most. And even when you crash, you're still going to be a little stronger than some other area. So I do understand Australian real estate. I grew up, my adult career up until recently was spent in California for 22 years. And I went through the bubbles there, and California did burst last time and did burst badly, finally. And they've never quite been the same, and they're going to burst again. So don't listen to your real estate broker. Do not listen to your financial advisor. Look, I like financial advisors. They usually get people to do the right thing. Don't try to time the markets. Don't get too, you know, not now. This is the crash of a lifetime. It's going to be followed by the sale on financial assets of a lifetime. And if you do not get out of the way of the bubble in real estate, in stocks, in gold, and other financial assets, which are all going to get reset down to reality, you will not have the capital to take advantage of this sale. And you may, and you probably will not have the capital in your account and your superannuation to retire. And you're going to have to go back to work or something, or go do network marketing or some desperate thing, okay? So this is serious. I'm a serious person. I've studied history. You are the best real estate analyst I've seen in the whole world. Nobody in the U.S. has the view you have and the tools down to lifestyles, not just normal demographics. I mean, you look at it from every angle. You're a realist, and you don't have an interest. I don't have an interest in a brokerage firm or mortgage brokerage or stock brokerage firm. I'm not a billionaire hedge fund. As soon as these hedge fund managers like Ray Dalio get successful, they become part of the establishment. And then they start saying, oh, we can't really have that big a downturn. And do-de-do-de-do. And don't panic. You can't listen to them either. Tony Robbins, I speak for him every year for his platinum, is his highest achieving group. And he used to be really hitting like you and me, real estate bubbles, winter season coming, and now he's almost a billionaire, and he's like, and hanging out with hedge fund managers like Ray Dalio saying, well, I don't think it's going to be do-de-do-de-do. No, it's not going to be do-de-do. Bubbles never, ever do anything but burst. There's not been one soft landing in any bubble of this magnitude, anywhere near this magnitude, in all of history. If there was even one, I was debating Mark Boris in Australia many years ago. And he said, Harry, you know, I can understand that real estate's getting overvalued. You know, it's very expensive. I was like, I can understand that demographics are slowing down, especially with boomers who are the prime. But why can't we just kind of like plane out here and not crash? And I'm like, Mark, I would love to tell you that. I just don't have one example in all of history. And if you have anybody that's studied more bubbles than I have in history, then I'll either shoot them or kiss their ass and hire them, okay? Because I don't know anybody that's studied bubbles or as far back in history. I don't know anybody as objective as people like you and me, because we don't have a stake in the system. I'm just here to represent the people and say, this is what that. So this is urgent. I know people can say, Harry, you've been warned about this year. Well, look, when Trump got elected, I got off the bubble damn thing. I got off late. No, he's going to cut taxes. You cannot argue with that. There's no way the markets do not go up for a few years with that. So I think this is about to end. I think this perfect chart is the most convincing thing I've seen in a while. But you also have to realize you need to think like the smart money, not like most people. Here's how most people think. They see, the longer they see a trend happen and go up, the more confidence they have in it. Wrong. Bad thinking. That's the dumb money. Who Who's piling into stocks, buying the most call options in history? Dumb money, everyday young people at E-Trade and Ameritrade and, you know, discount brokerages around the world. That's the dumb money. The smart money sees more risk the longer a boom happens and the more it bubbles and the higher value. They see the opposite because that's what history says. And that's just common sense. Nothing goes up forever. And worse, this particular bubble, more than any in history, the South Seas bubble in stock, in that stock would have been the most similar, where a government entirely created a bubble itself. The government owned a lot of the South Seas company. It was so big trade, they had a big stake in it. They had too high a debt, and to pay off their debts, they were encouraging people to buy shares to give them money and to keep the shares up. And they gave it easy lending and all this sort of stuff, okay? Totally government-created bubble, and that bubble did not go down 89%. It went down 99%. When governments get involved to this degree, so what governments have been doing in this bubble, particularly since 2009, printing unlimited amounts of money to prevent any recession or stock crash from going too far and turning it right back down and bubbling up again. They are not putting money in the banking system, or except recently in the COVID crisis, giving it to consumers or businesses, which could cause consumer price inflation. They're buying financial assets from financial institutions to keep them liquid, but it pumps up, it pushes down long-term rates, as you know. That makes real estate more valuable, stocks more valuable, right there, just the lower rates, and more money's coming in. Maybe at first buying bonds, but that's more money into the financial asset pool, which ultimately filters down to the highest returning assets like stocks and real estate, especially real estate on mortgage margin, mortgage loans with the highest return on equity. And that's what's creating the biggest bubbles. This printed money just pushes the gold bugs have been looking for a runaway inflation scenario, and we got no inflation even after, and you know this, Martin, the last round with COVID, just the three, just the ECB, Bank of Japan, and the U.S., and the U.S. was the lead on this one for the first time in a while, $7.3 trillion printed in months. And in the U.S. alone, $3.3 trillion in fiscal stimulus and another $2.2 getting ready to be voted on. This is off the charts just to prevent a short-term downturn. And let me tell you what I think, Martin, is the number one threat to this bubble, in addition to Biden maybe likely getting elected and raising taxes on corporations again, and affluent people, which is right at the heart of the bubble. Who owns all these stocks and really expensive real estate? Rich people. They own 88% of the financial assets in the world, okay? Just 20% and 1% own 40 to 50%, and 0.1% own 20 to 25%, okay? These are the people to keep this bubble going. You raise taxes on them and you raise taxes on corporate, that's bubble killer, okay? But one way or the other, this has to burst. And it's gonna be big. There is no way to do a soft landing on this because there's a point where it starts to deleverage and there's so much leverage in the system in derivatives, just like the GFC. All of a sudden, it was just some subprime mortgages in the U.S. It was 6% of our mortgage market, and then the whole world came down. How does that happen? Everything's on leverage. One thing bursts, and then people start worrying about risk and all bubbles and high and junk bonds and stuff, and then more things start bursting, and then more leverage gets thrown up, and the whole thing blows up. All it takes is a trigger. I say COVID was the trigger, and I say the big problem today, a great statistic I finally found, I knew this was out there, but it took me a while, 19% and still rising since 2009 when it was 2%, 19% of public companies in the U.S., and it's way higher in Japan, and I don't know what it is in Australia, but 19% are publicly trading companies that are operating and not paying any debt service, no interest or principal. They're already going under, but when the central banks print a ton of money, push it into the banks, into the financial system, nobody has to write down, oh, we'll just let these zombie loans go. We'll hope it turns around later. We'll let these zombie companies go. Oh, we'll let the zombie banks that have the bad loans keep going. See, the GFC should have wiped out those companies, cleaned them out, get this unproductive investment and loans out of the way in companies, get people into better companies, get the investment into better companies. Didn't do that because the money printing relieved that, and all the way we're relieving this. So we've gone from 2% to 19%. I'm sure it's 20 or 21% by today. A year from now, it'll be 25%. These zombie companies are going to start going under because of this COVID crisis down the road, because they're not going to be able to keep throwing trillions and trillions of real money, not printed money now. This is money borrowed by governments for the fiscal stimulus, and the fiscal stimulus is what's rising now. So I think this thing goes under by the first to second quarter of next year, regardless of who gets elected in the United States, more so if Biden gets in and raises taxes. And I'm rooting for Trump to win, so his sorry ass will get blamed for cranking up the ugly bubble that he criticized in his campaign. He was criticizing Obama and the Democrats for the big, fat, ugly bubble. And as soon as he got in, he ramped it more, because now he's in charge and nobody wants the bubble to burst when they're in charge. So this is urgent. This is going to happen. It's going to happen this year, next year, 2021. If it doesn't happen well into next year, say 6 to 8 months from now, then you can just write me off and I'll shut up. But you don't have to risk much, because markets are already way overvalued. Real estate stocks, that limits the gains. But again, what does the smart money see? The better the markets do, the bigger the bubble, the more the downside. My projections are 5,000 Dow, 450 S&P 500, and around 1,100 on the NASDAQ. That is an 85 to 89% crash, very similar to 1929 to 1932. And not quite as bad on stocks in Australia, but real estate going to go down 40% plus in the U.S. I think it's going to be 40 to 50 in the U.S. I know your figures suggest at least 40% overvaluation, but when you get overvalued 40, you don't crash to fair value. You crash below first and then slowly come back. So I think it's going to be 40 to 50% in Australia, despite your stronger demographics, because your bubble's so extreme. So you can listen to your stockbroker, you can listen to your wife or your husband, your uncle, your friend, your dumbass kid, sorry, your bright kid coming out of college thinking they know everybody, saying, what are you doing, mom and dad? Listen to this Harry Dent guy saying something extreme. This will not happen. I have studied history. If somebody can show me somebody that has a better argument than me, then listen to them. I don't have anybody for you to listen to other than you. You're about the only person I recommend to listen to in Australia. Seriously. Because you have to be objective, you have to be realistic, you have to analyze and look for the truth and not try to defend the system and limit, say, well, we don't want to say this because people, or we don't want to do that, or we don't want to do this because this would hurt this firm, or this would hurt real estate brokers. You've already had the greatest bubble in history. You're an idiot if you keep selling stuff in this industry to unsuspecting people. In fact, I was just doing an interview in Australia station, he's saying, hey, we have an innovative solution, which I kind of like. We're going to give our stimulus to people under 35, and we're going to help them buy houses and do stuff. I said, well, hey, if you build infrastructures for them and then maybe increase them, you're going to entice 35-year-olds to buy their first house into this greatest bubble, and you think you're helping them? You're going to kill them right off the bat. So yes, right to put stimulus more to young people because they're the future. All us old baby boomers, and I'm one of them, I'm 67. All I'm going to do in the next 20 years is die, retire and die. I am not the future. And we're the people who benefited from this bubble. The young people have not, so they're going to benefit when the bubble bursts and real estate becomes more affordable and companies become more efficient and good industries grow again and you get rid of all these zombie companies. You get a job with a zombie company, it's a dead end. You buy a house right now because the government gave you an extra special loan, you're going to lose your shirt. So you better listen to the right people here. And I'm just telling you, all these people are going to tell you I'm crazy. They're not crazy. They just don't know what's happening here. They don't know what a bubble is. They don't know history. They don't know this 90-year cycle. Again, it is the most obvious stock cycle. There's only one thing that stands out over 250 years of stock data, this 90-year super bubble great reset cycle. And it's not a 50% reset. It's usually 70 to 90% in stocks, 40 to 50% in real estate. If you can stand that sort of losses, fine. I think if you sit and take that risk, you're the idiot. And if you listen to your brother-in-law, you're the idiot listening to an idiot. And I don't want to call anybody, they just don't know. I took a seminar once and said, it's not what you know that matters, not what you don't know, because people know what they don't know. I'm not a heart surgeon. I can't do, you know, I can't fix door. I mean, whatever. It's what you don't know that you don't know that kills you. This is what this is. Nobody sees this coming. And it is clear as day to me, crystal clear, that this is going to happen. And it's going to hurt. 95% of people are going to get whacked and not know what hit them. And only a small percentage of people are going to see it coming and be like Joseph Kennedy, who moves from being a mere multimillionaire to a billionaire political dynasty, or General Motors, who moves from second place to Ford to passing them forever. General Motors saw it coming. Joseph Kennedy saw it coming. They made the profits of a lifetime out of it.
Yeah, and that's really the point, isn't it, Harry? That, you know, one, wake up and understand what's happening and why it's happening. And I'd like you to send me one of those charts and we'll show that chart, because that's really, really compelling. But the second thing is, take action, right? Because rather than just being caught in the headlights and just saying, oh, it's all too complicated, or everybody's saying that, you know, gold is the place to go, or stocks will go higher still, you know, no, get objective, really understand what's going on, but then make decisions, right? Because actually waking up is step one, but taking action is the next step, and taking the right action, and that's the difficult part.
Yeah, and you do have to wake up first. This is not obvious. This is totally obvious if you step back and get out of the bubble. If you're in the bubble, of course you don't want it to burst any more than Donald Trump or the premier of Australia or any country, you know, or Xing, you know, in China. Nobody wants this to burst. But if you step back from it, it's obvious this can't continue, and it's obvious that it compares to bubbles in history, and the only thing different about this bubble is greater government artificial support rather than just natural animal spirits. Human beings naturally get caught up in a bubble and overinvest just because they're high and they're getting something for nothing. But this is governments adding to that much more so. This is more global than any bubble in history, and it's lasted longer, particularly for stocks. I've studied all the stock bubbles, Martin. Stock bubbles, five, some of them are 2 to 3. The sharpest was China in 2 years. Up 6 times in 2 years and then crashed 70% in one. That's the most extreme. 87 bubble, 3 years up, you know, a few months down. Okay. This bubble has lasted almost 11 years now. Yep. That's never. The longest bubble I found was Japan's before it crashed. That was 6 years. Most bubbles are 5 years. 25 to 29, the tech bubble, late 94 to late early 2000, just a little over 5 years. 5-6 years back, this breaks all the records. It's only bigger. It's not different. And there's only one way bubbles end in history, unless something totally new is happening. And you want to bet on something that's never happened in all of history? Now, that's a wild bet. Betting that a bubble this big could crash is actually a smart bet. You're just hedging your gains you've made already. That's what smart money would do. You don't even have to get out of it. You can just hedge it. I could buy a put option right now on this. I could still be in the FANG stocks and buy a put option for about 3-4% of my portfolio and keep making the 20%+ a year gains, but protect myself and not lose if they crash 40% in the next few months. And I think that's what's likely to happen after election. After election, another crash like February, March of this year, but only more. Each crash is going to be stronger. That's also been it. Ever since the January 2008 first 10-12% crash in a matter of a week or two, every crash has been sharper and deeper. And the next crash is going to be the same. So if you think the last one was bad, when most markets went down 40%, the next one's probably going to be 45-50%. And the end result, from my view, is going to be 80-90% down in most stock markets, maybe 60-80% in Australia stock markets.
Well, I'll tell you one other little indicator that I look at, Harry, is I look at the money supply, which is going massively up 11% over the last year. Credit growth is actually down. It's about 2%, right? So what's actually happening is all of this money creation and this liquidity pumping that's going in is not actually inflating the lending momentum anymore. It's actually deaccelerating it. And more people are now paying down their mortgages than ever before. The smart people, perhaps, in terms of actually understanding what's going on, right? That is the other, I think, late cycle indicator that we are very, very close to a significant reset.
And it also explains why we're not having consumer inflation, we're having financial asset inflation. I mean, another thing happened at this Tony Robbins Platinum Group. Again, I do it every year in February. And he has billion-dollar hedge fund managers come. You know, I mean, it's a great thing. But Ray Dalio said the stupidest thing I've ever heard from one of the smartest people in the world. He came out before me, and he had some. He said, I've got 6 to 9 year credit cycles over time, and I've got 75 to 100 bigger credit cycles. And he's saying, you know, the GFC was part of that 6 to 9. He's saying this one is the beginning of the big cycle. He says, but I don't think this downturn is going to be as bad as the GFC because I don't see as much credit risk. I'm like, Ray, you are the bubble. It's hedge funds like you. It's the financial assets. Here's a good statistics, Martin. It's now about a little over $500 trillion. 2017, Saville put together everything, including real estate equity in your own home and not just investment real estate. All financial assets, $477 trillion. I'm estimating it's 5-10 trillion plus. All the debt in the world, about $255 trillion. Financial assets are now double the debt bubble. That wasn't true in 2007-8 last time. They were maybe just a little larger. Quantitative easing has created greater financial asset bubbles. The reason they did quantitative easing was because, like, people weren't borrowing. When they first put money in 2009 to save the banks, they hoped that liquidity and increased reserves would go into bank lending. Well, the reason it didn't, you and I know, because people are already too much in debt. In the whole bubble boom, corporations and consumers all borrowed to the hilt. How do you buy a bigger house when you already have 6 bedrooms? You only have no kids left and you used to only have 3. How do you buy a big, you know what I'm saying? And you get more and more in debt. So people didn't want to borrow more. So what they realized, I think by accident, what happened here, is that the central banks were trying to save the banks with liquidity, but they're also, oh, wait a minute, but financial assets are going up. Well, that makes at least the top 20% of people richer who own 88% of the financial life. And that gets GDP back up, this marginal wealth effect. And so they just kept doing it because it's the only, they didn't intend to do this, Martin, is what I'm saying. They're not smart enough to even do this, okay? They did it by accident and it worked, and they kept doing it because nothing else worked. And just what you said, the signs are, no, people aren't borrowing more to speculate. The speculation's going up because they're pushing the markets up and people are investing more in things like stocks and real estate. Because it's going up, and that's not a good reason in a bubble. That's the whole trick of bubbles. People start buying not because of the fundamentals, only because it's going up, and you feel like a fool if you miss out. That's the trap.
Yeah.
That's what sucks everybody in and then flushes them out when the last sucker gets in. And what I'm saying to you in the audience, you're probably the last sucker to buy that house or to buy that Apple stock or Facebook or whatever. Okay? Yeah. You're not really the last sucker. A ton of people like you are doing it at the same time. It feels like you're the last sucker. And anybody who trades market short term knows when you get flushed out, when the smart money flushes you out by selling into you and flushes out your position or draws you into a bubble on top and sucks you in, when it goes the other way, you always feel like I was the dumbest person. Well, I was the last person to buy or sell. No, a lot of people like you are. I'm trying to warn you, don't buy this bubble.
Yeah.
You got to do something different. You either got to be safe or you got to be in the sectors like high quality bonds that actually appreciate from falling inflation and zero, even more zero rates or more negative rates. Only the safest bond, because any other bond with risk is going to have default risk that's going to outweigh the deflation play. Stocks are going to crash, okay? You got to get out of the way of stocks, and real estate's going to crash. They're all risk assets. And even if you're paying down your mortgage debt, your house is going to fall 40, 50%, and that is your equity lost, period, whether you pay off your debt or not. In fact, I encourage some people with really high debt and low equity, don't give any money back to the bank, because they may have to take half your loss with you when this next crash happens and governments finally force banks to mark down the market instead of just printing more money and covering it over. At some point, they're going to have to do that. So what I do, and I've only been able to do this in Australia so far, we're starting a fund in Australia, probably right around the end of this month. And people can, I'm giving a seminar on Friday, 11 a.m. Sydney time, and you can figure that out elsewhere in Australia or New Zealand, on why this fund's going to be different. It's going to be an in-season fund, not an all-season fund. Not going to be a large-cap fund or a small-cap fund or an Asia fund or a bond fund or a high-yield fund. It's going to always be diversified in these sectors in any time period, short or long term, where the demographic trends or the migration trends or the urbanization trends, all things I can measure very accurately. You know how much difference there is between Nigeria as they urbanize and India? They're both about the same urban, low. India's got 11,000 GDP per capita and Nigeria's got 3,000. Nigeria projects to 8,000, India projects to 27,000, higher than China. Nobody knows this stuff. This is simple, obvious stuff. Economists don't study what matters. People, investment, business innovation, technology innovation matters. These things come in cycles. These things happen in different countries, different consumer sectors at different times. They're all measurable. Most funds and fund managers look for trends to emerge. Oh, this looks like, China's, wow. They jump on, maybe 7 years into it. But when China starts to fail, as they're going to, they'll be years late getting out. Our indicators tell us when an urbanization trend is getting spicy, as it's happening, when demographics is going to kick up, and if not now, when, which country, which sectors. You know what's going to be the best sector? I may send you this chart too. In Australia, next 50 years, nursing homes are going to go straight up. Unprecedented boom in nursing homes and assisted living. And the baby boomers are just getting into now. And unlike the U.S., who has a similar trend for 26 years in boom, Australia's trend is larger and higher, 50-year boom in nursing homes. Can you imagine getting into that before, as it's just about to start, which is now, and riding that years before anybody else discovers it? So that's what we do. It's called a dense sector fund, densesectorfund.com. But for this presentation, which is coming right as we're about to launch the fund, I'm telling people, if you're interested in putting a little starter money in this fund to test it out, and I'm saying you're crazy if you don't at least do that, you're going to have to get in early, because I think, remember, that February-March crash came out of nowhere, bam! It wasn't it was a waterfall. Well, we're doing this, we're going to see another waterfall just ahead. You're going to have to get in this fund. We're going to be mildly unleveraged short stocks. We're going to be in high-quality bonds. We're going to be in the things that do well, and we're going to be out of the bubbles. Nobody else has the freedom to do it. We've defined we can do this. If you're a large-cap growth fund, you have to keep buying large-cap growth stocks, and your only defense is to get into healthcare or utilities that go down 50% instead of 80%. That's your only defense. We don't have that problem. We're not going to be in them. In fact, we're going to be mildly short stocks, and we're going to be heavily long the same type of bonds that went up. The Treasury bond in the U.S. went up 24% when stocks went down 35% in the U.S. and 40%. They went up because they're the safe haven. They're the deflation play, and deflation comes out of this. So I encourage people, HarryDentFund.com with a capital H, HarryDentFund.com. You go to that site now, because this is on Friday, and you will automatically be registered for this 11 a.m. Sydney time, and you will get the registration form for the fund, which you need to look at. You need to look at something like this now, because if you don't get in early, you're going to miss a lot here. And again, you can just try it to an extent, but I'm just telling you, this is a different fund. It addresses everything I'm saying today, everything you're saying. You've got to get out of the way of the bubble. But hey, some people just go to cash. Well, cash will hold your value. High quality bonds and being mildly unleveraged short stocks will actually increase your capital while things go down. And then the more they go down, the more you can buy in a couple years from now, real estate again, stocks, bet, you know, and create a fortune while most people are going to lose most of their superannuation. So that's all I can do. I can warn people, and I couldn't start a fund like this in the United States. It's too hard here. We found the right people in Australia that got behind this and understand what I'm doing, and we can start. And we're going to bring it to the U.S. from Australia probably 6 to 12 months from now, but Australians and New Zealand is going to get this fund first. So I just say take a look and listen to this seminar because, you know, we're talking, I'm going to get more into how we identify and how different countries are on urbanization and demographics. They're wildly different. How consumers sector, the difference between nursing homes, you know, and like life insurance is already all been bought by the baby boomer. It's done. If you want to make money in insurance, you buy, you know, long-term care insurance. You know, we know all these things and know where to be ahead of time rather than following the trends and getting in late and then getting out late. That's the trick. And this is no genius stuff I'm doing. We're just looking at the right stuff. Most fund managers don't have these tools, number one, and they don't have the leeway. If they're large cap growth, they got to keep buying large cap growth. That's the definition of their fund. Oh my God, I feel sorry for these people. Because you know large cap growth stocks? 1969, 82 just went down. 2000, you know, every time you have a generational downturn, they go down for 12 to 14 years. They went down from 29 to 42. What are you... You know, see, so the fund industry, I've been working in the fund industry and with financial advisors for decades now, and I know their blind spots. It's cool to kind of define funds so a financial advisor can put a bunch of them together and fit your need. That's cool. But these funds that's over-specialized just become dead ends. And financial advisors, as I said earlier, do not realize that once or twice in a lifetime, you get the type of crash that's resetting a bubble in everything, and diversification and being in different sectors doesn't work. You have to be defensive and then reinvest in a diversified portfolio when the resets happen. The diversification does you know well when everything goes down at the same time.
Yeah. Harry,
what's going to happen.
So I've got a few quick questions just to follow up on that. You know, we've been discussing the sector fund for a little while. And by the way, DFA has no financial relationship with you or your fund. This is just because I think it's a really important conversation to have. Three questions. The first question is, what currency is it going to be denominated in? So, you know, is it going to be in Aussie dollars or is it going to be in US dollars?
This is going to be an Australia fund.
Right.
But we're going to be making investments around the world. It's global. I mean, Australia has some of the best aging consumer demographic plays. That's going to be a place we're going to look to Australia for. Australia actually has an overall demographic curve because of your high Asian immigration. Your spending wave looks more like Southeast Asia than it does other developed countries. U.S. goes more sideways, East Asia, Southern and Central Europe, and some major parts of the rich world all go down even in the next boom. So that's why things are going to be very, very different, and you need to know where to be. And again, we can be anywhere as long as it's we can say we're here because we're in something where the fundamental demographic or urbanization or sector consumer cycle trends favor it in this time period.
Right.
We will be diversified. We're not going to bet everything on one thing. We will be diversified, but we can always move with these changing sectors. And they do change, but they change predictably. I wish more economists and fund managers could see this, but they don't. They just don't right now. So all I can do is warn people what's going to happen, why it's going to be unique. And at least in Australia and New Zealand, I'm hoping to do this within 6 to 12 months in the U.S., but I cannot do this in the U.S. right now. It's just... I could not get a fund up. I couldn't get a firm to back this because it's too different from the industry. that's got blinders on right now.
So, right, but intrinsically then there are going to be exchange rate risks they're going to have to manage as well,
that's
right?
That's right, so, and we're going to have to hedge that. But I will tell you, because of the low government debt in Australia and stronger demographics, and because the U.S., and this has already been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt if you look at it. What happened in the GFC? U.S. dollar went up 27, 28% when gold and silver crashed, and real estate and everything went down, because the world saw, oh, this isn't just a normal recession. This is going to be deep. This is going to be deflation. Gold doesn't like deflation. Silver and commodities, hey, real estate hates deflation more than anything. And stocks, they all hate it. The U.S. dollar, yeah, are we printing too much money? Yes. Do we have too much debt? Yes. We are not printing as much money as Japan nearly, and not as much as Europe. We're the best house in a bad neighborhood with a reserve currency. Australia, without being reserve of currency, I think the Australian dollar is also going to hold up well, not quite as well as the U.S. It's only going to depreciate versus the U.S. So we're going to have to hedge that somewhat. But the Australian U.S. dollar, we're going to be in the most, and I think those are the currencies we'll hold. The Chinese yuan is not going to hold up. Japanese yen, no. The euro, no. Watch, mark my words on this. They went down in the GFC. They're going to go down more in this crisis. So we're going to be more in the currencies and investment. And then we come in the boom. I'm telling you, the U.S. dollar not going to go up in the next boom, not with Asia rising even faster and broader than they did in this last boom. There's no way the U.S. can continue to be the reserve currency for more than maybe a decade in the next boom. And Asian currency is going to rise. And that's where we're going to be investing most, Australia and Southeast and Asia and India. And those are going to be the stronger currencies. In the next boom, I am not going to be looking at the U.S. dollar to be a strong currency. I'm looking for it to be weaker. But in this crash, U.S. dollar one, Australia dollar two, and then maybe a few others like Swedish krona stuff. But I'm not going to be investing in Swedish kronas or in those assets. We are going to be investing in a lot of U.S. treasury bonds and Australia treasury bonds and shorting Australian and U.S. stock indices. We are going to be doing that.
Okay. Second question.
That will minimize that currency risk a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Second question. Fees, fixed fees, performance fees, and what's the quantum?
Well, you know, I mean, they started with these hedge funds with, you know, 2% expense fees, management fees, and 20% share of profits. Well, you know, they were really doing something unique and stuff, but all hedge funds, all you have to do to beat a hedge fund today is buy the FANG stocks. They can't beat that. Yeah. Because all the money's going in the FANG stocks. Seven. Actually, they call them fat mans now. They're eight stocks, including sales.com, salesforce.com, or whatever. I mean, so. I mean, you know, that's the problem there. So, you just have to get out of the way of this sort of thing.
Right.
You can't be like everybody else and survive this.
Yeah. So I think.
You know, fees are going to go back more. I think it's good to have some performance fee in a fund. Mm. But I think the fees overall, I got to get back down to more normal. We didn't usually have fees to this degree in the past.
Right.
So I think that's going to, that grew in the bubble, and that's going to fade into the next boom.
Okay. Right. So you can't put a stake in the ground yet, but that's clearly something which people need to think about as they go into this. The third question is, how are you going to report performance of the fund? Is it going to be, you know, quotable, visible, or is it going to be a private fund? How's that going to work?
No. Yeah, it's going to be visible. You know, but this is a public fund and stuff. And you know, the thing about this fund, and in this time, there isn't a great benchmark. There just isn't. If I had to have one, it'd be the S&P 500 because it's the most globally diversified and largest stock market. But even that not, and going into the next boom, it's certainly not going to be the best indicator. So you know, we're going to have more our internal benchmarks until we can find in the next boom. But in this crash, there's going to be no benchmark that makes any sense because everything's going to be falling. But in the next boom, we're probably going to have to develop a kind of a composite benchmark, maybe of global stocks that makes the most sense for this fund. And we'll get to that. But right now, we're just saying we're our number one goal is to preserve your capital. Our number two goal is to actually grow it.
Yep.
To some, we're not going to take crazy risk and be highly leveraged stuff, but just grow it reasonably in this downturn so that your capital can grow. And then when things really crash, which if this is at all a bubble, I say it is, that's what's going to happen. You're going to be buying stuff for 5, 10, 20 cents on the dollar in real estate for 40, 50, 60 cents on the dollar. How can you go? I mean, how can you not go? How can you go wrong doing that? I tell people, if you'd have bought anything in the early 80s, you would have made money. Real estate, commodities, stock, you know. And then you go back to the early 30s, you bought anything, you'd have made money for decades. So the big opportunity here is the crash. And you can only take advantage of that if you've at least protected your money. That's enough. But why? But what if you make 20, 30, 40% to what you have instead of just protecting it and then get to buy at 10, 20 cents on the dollar or 40, 50 cents on the dollar? I mean, I'm just telling you, this may be the worst downturn in our lifetime, and I am straight out calling it that. It is also simultaneously the sale and opportunity of a lifetime. You will never get to buy financial assets. And the best thing about Australia is that you're sitting on the cusp of Southeast Asia and India, which are the next great boom. And no longer China. I'm telling you, China and Japan ain't going nowhere. China's somewhat urban, but those countries are not going to do what they do, what they did. They've done it. You're on the cusp of that. And you are one of the five small developed countries in the world that actually have a very positive spending wave in the next boom. U.S. has a good millennial wave, but it only gets us back to where the baby born. At best, we only get back to the same number of homes or the same size economy. Is that we don't go to new heights like you do. So Australia and in Southeast Asia and India, which is also South Asia, that is the future. And you're right there. We're a long way from that. We're halfway around the world from the next boom in the U.S. And Europe is going to be a nothing burger.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
No, I agree. You know, I think the Australian story actually is a very interesting one ahead for all the reasons that you've discussed. But one, you have to read the signs right. Two, you have to pre-position correctly, right? And three, then you must do the right things to take advantage rather than just marching with the crowds and basically going off the cliff.
Yeah. That's right. You know. I encourage, like here's this. I said, look, this is a good core fund in the super annuities. You start with this, and then if we're doing well, and I think then you can add to it. But then you can add other things. You can add a high quality bond fund. You know, if you need income and stuff, and you can add, you know, certain things. And so you have to do something different here. You cannot do the same thing you've been doing. That's the whole thing. A bubble goes to extremes and then it reverses those extremes. And again, I can tell you about where a bubble's going to burst because it goes back to the what I call the bubble origin. And that's not that hard to measure in real estate or stock. It's not the bottom of the last down market 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. It's when stocks or real estate start to diverge from the fundamental trends. When real estate starts going up 10 to 15% a year, then rather than the inflation rate, maybe 2, 3, 4%. When stocks, instead of going up the normal 7% adjusted for inflation, boom, start going up 15, 20, 25. You can measure when that divergence happens. It'll go back typically to that point. And I'm telling you, I'll tell you a good rule for real estate for me in any country, but in Australia a little more specifically. Look at any real estate you have, because real estate's different. Bigger bubbles, commercial, residential, West Coast versus East Coast in Australia, you know, Perth versus Sydney or Melbourne. And Melbourne's had the strongest bubble, by the way, in recent years, and even though Sydney's a bit more overvalued. Ash, look and see, what was my real estate worth around 2005 to 6? In the U.S., I call it 2000 to 2001. 2005 to 6, that is the most likely target. I'm just telling most people, if you're objective enough to look at that, you're going to be a little shocked because real estate has really gone up a lot. And again, Melbourne may end up falling more than Sydney, even though Sydney's more of a value because they've seen the greatest gains since then.
Yeah.
And Perth will fall the least because Perth's already been hit by the commodity crisis. It'll get hit more, but it's already been hit. Brisbane has not bubbled as much in the last decade as Sydney and Melbourne. And Adelaide is Adelaide. It's a boring place like Omaha, Nebraska, or somewhere. And the boring places never bubble as much as dynamo places. So people in Adelaide are going to weather this a lot better. I would not be as worried if I was in Adelaide or Perth. And I tell you, if we're talking about the next great commodity bubble driven by Asia, and you're talking about Southeast Asia and India being the next growing market, who in Australia, what city is the closest to those markets for exporting there? Perth.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Perth could do the best in the down and out, and then Perth could be the strongest coming out of this. So again,
there's an interesting speculation.
They're obvious. They're not. Yeah. This is not rocket science.
Yeah, there's an interesting speculation going around that Perth wants to declare UDI because, of course, it's managed to contain the virus quite well in WA, right? And their economy looks as though it's beginning to move ahead compared to some of the other ones. And as you say, they're so much closer to the rest of Asia. So it'll be really interesting to see that that East Coast, West Coast battle. Harry, it's been really great to catch up with you. We'll make sure all the links are below. We'll include the couple of charts that you've mentioned in the show as well, so people can have a look at those directly. And I think that the bottom line warning is this: the signs are there, the cliff is approaching, and frankly the decisions you take over the next few weeks and months will determine your financial future, not just for a few years, but probably for the next generation.
Yeah, and again, remember one thing: every time this bubble goes up a little more, the risk rises. It does not prove that it's sustainable. It's just proving it's more unsustainable. That's the way smart money thinks. Don't get tricked into this. Oh, well, it hasn't burst now, and people like Harry and Martin have been wrong so far. That is the wrong way to think here. Look at history. Greater bubble, greater the burst. The farther it goes, the riskier it gets, and then the more it bursts when it does. So do not get consoled. Even if this goes another couple more months than I'm saying, I think the stock market bubble is about over. And I think the stock market bubble is going to trigger the real estate bubble because real estate has been underbuilt since the GFC. And that's why it's more scarce and holding up better. But there's no way when stocks crash and the economy goes down that real estate will not go down with it. And real estate is the most overvalued ever.
Don't great warning. That.
Stocks great. Are overvalued. The stocks get overvalued all the time. Real estate does not get overvalued like this very often. No. This is the greatest real estate bubble in history, the most global. Do not think this thing will not be reset to reality. And do not think it's not a good thing for the Australian economy or the Chinese economy or any economy to get it reset down to where people can afford to buy it again. And
no, it will,
high real estate hurts an economy.
Yeah,
how can it do anything but hurt?
Yeah, absolutely. Do well, better. Unfortunately, there are many people who just keep talking it up and hoping it won't fall. But as you're right in saying, long term, actually, to get back to a more sustainable market actually makes a lot of sense. But the journey to that is not going to be straightforward.
Harry, especially for young people who interview I just did, you're saying, oh, we're going to help the young. You want to help the young people? Burst this bubble now.
Yeah.
That's what will make them more prosperous in the future and have a better standard of living.
Yeah.
Because they have no shot now. The people in Japan, China, young people really have no shot.
No, absolutely. Well, you end up just being bribed to try and get in and put ever more of your income in and just play the old game. Then needs to be a new game. Harry, look, I appreciate your time today. Thank you very much for that. I wish you the best with the presentation on Friday. We'll put the links in below. And we'll keep watching for those signs and see whether it all comes as you are predicting.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks again, Martin.
Great. Good talk to you. Thanks. Take care.